You are now listening to FMB Radio.
And welcome to FMB Radio. My name is Lindsay Collins. I am your host. I am so excited to be back. I had to take, was it last week off? Did I take a week off? What day is it? I think I did. I know I did because it was Charleston food and wine. Charleston wine and food. And what that means is that everybody's fucking busy doing all kinds of crazy shit. The festival comes once a year. It takes the town by storm. There's a lot of older, rich white people that come in and come to this festival. And it pretty much monopolizes every person that works in food and beverage from here to Hollywood, South Carolina. And there's great things about it. There's not so fun things about it. But it is what it is. It happens every year. It's a great way to showcase what's going on in the city and also just run all of the talent into the fucking ground. You have to pay to play, and that's a totally understandable sentiment. And it's a great honor. I mean, the fucking Today Show was here. They were like broadcasting live from the Charleston Food and Wine Festival, which was absolutely insane. That's how big this festival has gotten. I mean, Al Roker's walking around eating bunless burgers from up there. Like, it's the big leagues. Like, this guy is eating a Pubfare burger, no bun. He's gluten-free. That's why he's looking so good. It's huge. But the incredible task that the restaurant people are sort of charged with is to basically clone themselves, because you have to represent yourself at the festival if you're one of the people that's doing an event. And you also have to man the battle station at home, because you're getting just destroyed with VIPs. Just chefs that are in town doing events are going to try to check out your place while they're here. They're eating everywhere. They're trying to also squeeze in meals in between events. So it's just this kind of like blurry, sweaty, sleepy, but adrenaline fueled party that just gets all over you. It gets all over everyone. And it's exciting. I got to just sneak into the festival. I didn't have any credentials. Charleston Wine and Food Festival. If you want to give me credentials, you can just email me at fnbradio@gmail.com. That's fnbradio@gmail.com if you want to give me some credentials next year. And the credentials are the little badge that gets you in, and then you get to just eat and drink everything. I didn't get that, so I get this little wristband that is basically red. It looks like a bunch of stop signs, and it says, "This is not a pass. This is not a ticket. It just allows you to not get kicked out, but you're not allowed to eat or drink anything." So they just kind of slapped that on my wrist, and then they took me to the Heritage Radio tent, which is my favorite place in the whole culinary village, because I fucking love them. If you're not listening to podcasts from Heritage Radio Network, then I don't know what podcast you're listening to. They cover everything that's anything in food, wine, lifestyle, anything loosely related to food, they've got it covered. They're out of Brooklyn. They're some of the best people ever. I love them. They invited me in, and we did a podcast that you can listen to on Heritage Radio on Tour. And it was called Ladies Who Pod. And it was me, Melissa Hall from the amazing Gravy Podcast, which is the Southern Foodways Alliance podcast. It's super, super intensely produced and so good. She was awesome. The one and only Catherine Budig of Free Cookies. Shout out to Free Cookies. I produced that show. Kate Fagan and Catherine Budig have a show called Free Cookies. If you're not listening to that, just get your head out of your ass. Listen to Free Cookies. It's such a great show, and I'm not just saying that because I produce it. I love them. I love what they do. It's always a jaunt of a time. They cover all kinds of things. Check them out. Free cookie. Who doesn't fucking want free cookies? But Catherine Budig was on the panel, and we just chatted it up about podcasting, being a lady in the food podcast world, and it was really fun. But was I the only one that noticed that they canceled the giant party? So I think if you've listened to the show every single year for the past 2 years, this would have been the third year. There's this crazy party, and it's only for like industry people, really. Like if you worked in the festival in some capacity, obviously you're there. If you are a chef, a restaurateur, a sommelier, anybody that contributed to the festival, talent, panelists, writers, media, PR, they all get invited. And it's the last 2 years it's been at this beautiful hotel, the Dewberry, and it's hosted by Williams Sonoma. And it's just the most fun. It's the one time that everybody gets to kind of get together and just really just get ridiculous. There's so many ridiculous things at these parties. There's just lots of booze, fancy snacks, caviar, Wagyu, good times. It's intimate enough. It's not anybody from the actual festival, like ticket holders. It's just your restaurant community. And it is something that I like look forward to. And everybody that works the festival, they kind of like work towards it so they can get to that night and just let their hair down and be like, oh, we did it. Oh my God, we made it through. I worked 5 events. I worked 3 events. I did 10 podcasts. I, you know, schlepped around tents. I handled all my clients. Everybody who's just worn out and exhausted gets to throw on a little dress, show up and drink too much or hang out, eat too much. And they just mysteriously canceled it. Unceremoniously as well. Like it wasn't like, hey guys, like we're, you know, so sorry. There will not be an after party. It was just like, there just wasn't one. And everybody that I talked to thought they just didn't get invited, which maybe was the plan. Because that's what I thought. I was like, oh, well, I wasn't really a part of the festival, so it wouldn't make sense for me to really be invited anyway, but they usually always do. Thanks, guys. But they did not. And I thought, that sucks. Like, that's the one thing that it's like working all holiday to make all the shit for Thanksgiving Day and then just being like, we're not going to do the part where we eat the bird. We're just going to let that part go. Or we're not going to do the tag football game afterwards. I don't know. It was just so anticlimactic for the people that worked it because they were like, you know, some of them are working so many events. Like some of people are double booked for events where they're like, how the fuck am I supposed to be in 2 places at once? And they do it. And they're happy to do it because it's great to be on that stage. It's a great way to get your name out there. It's also like you probably wouldn't be there if your name isn't already out there. So that's a little where I get a little like, you know, you scratch your back, I'll scratch mine, because those guys are already somebody if they're at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, right? It's not a place for up-and-coming talent. It's a place for the best of the best in the city. So they're already somebody in their own right, and they deserve to be celebrated. And all I'm saying is, Williams Sonoma, you got to throw them the party. Or maybe it's not you. Maybe it's Toyota. Maybe it's any one of the giant sponsors. Maybe you guys throw a party. Because to just not reward them after a week... The weekend, in quotation, starts on Wednesday, and many of the chefs are prepping, you know, days before that, and the plans that go into it are started even months before that. So don't get cheap on the party. That's all I'm saying. And if you are, you know, own up to it. Don't make people ask around like they're some kind of blacklisted asshole. That's my rant. That's it for today. I could rant on so many things right now. It's been a crazy week for food news. There is so much food news happening. But I think one rant is enough for one day. What do you think? The good news is I was busy doing lots of podcasts during the festival. And one of my favorite ones is the one that I'm going to show you today. It's Jeff Ryan of Red Clay Hot Sauce. I am not sponsored by Red Clay Hot Sauce, but I do want you to know that even I would pay them to let me talk about them because that's how much I love their product. I was so happy to have Jeff on because he's just the nicest, most intelligent, slash down to earth and easy to talk to dude that there is. And it just doesn't get any better than that if you're talking about a podcast guest. He's the fucking man. If you haven't had his hot sauce, please just order it. Please just figure that shit out. Figure out how to get it. If it's not in your grocery store, luckily it's here in our grocery store, but if you live somewhere and it's not in your grocery store, you can order it online. You can email me and I'll send you a care package. It's absolutely amazing. He was a chef before he launched this hot sauce company. It's all local, and by local, I mean it's all South Carolina-grown peppers that go into the hot sauce. He's got a beautiful story. The product is even better, and I was super-duper excited to sit down and talk with him in the lovely Hotel Bennett. Guys, have you been to the Hotel Bennett? I'll say something. It caught me by surprise, the Hotel Bennett, because it opened right on the park. Like, it is in Marion Square. It's as though the Hotel Bennett is there, like this perfect little like mansion, and then the lawn, the grounds are actually the park. That's how beautiful it is. It opens right up into the center of the city. It's got at least three restaurants that are all beautiful. Cocktail lounge, a guy playing the piano when you walk in, absolute luxury, double staircases. It's a dream. It's such a beautiful place. There's so many reasons to go there. If you're visiting Charleston, if you live in Charleston, go to the Hotel Bennett. Check it out. Because we were able, they were so kind. I reached out to them and was like, hey, can I sneak into your hotel and do some podcasts with some super cool people that were in town for the festival? So this interview was taped last week. Right in the middle of all that. Let's bring him on. What do you say? I'm really excited to welcome Jeff Ryan to the show. Jeff, thank you so much for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Your condiments are in all of my favorite people's refrigerators. And I use your product, which is Red Clay Hot Sauce, to gift people that are visiting or like that I want to be like, this is what you need to not leave Charleston without.
Right.
Almost every time they come. So this is very exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's cool to learn more about the process of how you make it. Cause the story is kind of on the back of the bottle, which I read as I'm like pouring it on everything.
Right.
But I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about exactly how it got started and how you keep it. If we still keep it local. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
How you do that.
So we started it just by, by a chef, desire to make things in house, and doing it our way. There's a little bit of stubbornness and there's a little bit of, probably arrogance in every chef saying that they can make things better than the next person. Mm-hmm. And there's also a craftsmanship approach where you actually want to challenge yourself to make something delicious from the ground up. So when we were at The Ordinary, that was kind of one of the drives to building the kitchen from opening. And that was to make our own ketchups, do a lot of in-house pickles, do a lot of, fish butchery, was a huge part of our program. And then the condiments in the pantry. So, I started dabbling with a variety of peppers and settled on one that I really liked, which was a Fresno chili. I just found it to be the most approachable out of all the peppers, and it had a predominant flavor rather than just heat. And so then as it became popular amongst customers, someone actually approached and they said, hey, we should start taking this to market. And once that conversation started happening, I started to say, okay, how now can I differentiate it even further and where it could have a marketing appeal? So it kind of separates us in this crowded hot sauce market. And that's where the bourbon barrel aging came into play, and then sourcing just the highest quality pepper and ingredients that we blend with.
Amazing. And I think it really shows for me in the sauce because I have different hot sauces for different applications for the most part. And then I have like without sounding like this is a Red Clay commercial, I literally put it on everything. Like then it's like my all purpose, like go to, and then, you know, I'll dabble with others. Like there's certain things that I still use like Tabasco for, and there's certain things that I still use just Sriracha for. And, and they have these things where they go, but if I can only carry one hot sauce with me, it's Red Clay because there's so much depth, and that must come from the barrel aging, right?
Yeah. Just the whole process, the fermentation, is where a lot of that depth comes into play and makes it more about flavor. Whereas if you're just blending and cooking it, it all becomes kind of monochromatic in their flavor profile. Mm-hmm. And then all you taste is just heat, right? Because you've cooked out all the nuance. So why go through all the effort to source all this stuff and spend tireless amounts of hours fermenting it just to cook it and then just make it one note? So once you can actually dedicate yourself to the sourcing of the product, it's then how do we now maintain that integrity and honor it, the work that the farmer put in, the work that you put in, and to showcase it the best way possible. And I think that's how I approached food as a chef. I was never big into the fluff. It was more about how do I take this ingredient that I have sourced from this individual who I have so much respect for and showcase it in its most natural, simplistic form.
Yeah, and that's what I think is such the perfect philosophy, is like, if you have something that great, like, just don't fuck it up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because really, if you have something that's subpar, yeah, you have to do a lot to kind of hide things and fix things. And I have trouble, you know, seasoning an arugula salad is harder for me than like cooking a piece of meat because it's...
There's nothing to hide behind.
Exactly.
And it's funny that you use those words, because when I was outside of Chicago, I opened up a place... and we had our own garden in front of a hotel that we were pulling ingredients from. We were sourcing, going into the Green City Market twice a week in Chicago to get ingredients, working with this one family farm called Slagle Family Farm to buy whole goats, pork, beef, everything that we could do. And my message to the cooks was literally, we're sourcing the best product. Our job is to not fuck it up. Those direct words. And I still have some of those cooks now who reach out to me. One of my buddies opened a restaurant in Richmond and named... one of the best restaurants in Richmond, and in his acceptance speech, he actually said that same thing.
So I think
that's like, it's just an underlying philosophy that I think cooks should be taking into their production.
100%. And so when you mentioned that if you cook it, it becomes one noted, do you not cook Red Clay hot sauce?
No, it's all cold filled. So think about olive oil, right? What's the best olive oil?
Cold pressed,
right? So again, when you come at things from a chef's mentality, you're going to look for other examples throughout the world. And olive oil is certainly one to take note of. And that's where kind of that applied. And just when you ferment, like, why is sauerkraut delicious? Because it's so funky, right?
Yeah.
And you're not going to cook that. So that's, we just kind of looked around and tried to find those different applications that would then make us separate from the rest of the market, as well as just look at something, how we can make it most delicious and complex. I think when food is simple yet complex, I think that's when you've really achieved something. Because as you were indicating earlier with the arugula salad, like, it's real hard to not nail seasoning. Like, all your flaws are exposed. You're very transparent.
Yes.
So your technique has to shine through.
That's really, really cool, because I think fermenting is something that people don't fully understand. And,
it's terrifying for some.
Yeah. You're like, is this it?
Right.
Because it's, I don't know. It's, you have to really understand that process. And so how long did it take to develop when you were creating?
Honestly, there was a lot of trial and error. You know, the first couple of batches, weren't great. You know, it's still every single day with fermentation, it's wild, right? It's not, that's kind of one of the, I guess the balances of it all is, it's like you try to eliminate the variables, but there's a extent that you can never do that.
Right.
And that's what's truly fascinating to me, is I'm not one that I just like to press play and then forget about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the constant kind of going back and tweaking and elevating and trying to find a better way. Eventually you're going to settle on a method, but I think it's fascinating that you just have to have this little kind of dance with this raw ingredients. And I think that's what nature is. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that I think you can relate to in life that are all about balancing the variables.
And when you have a product like this that you want to keep local, and not local, but as in terms of where you're sourcing the product local, what is that conversation like when you're like, oh, we need to scale this to where we can sell more of this, and still, where do we get these mini fucking Fresno peppers?
Right. It's like talking to a wall sometimes. There's a, you know, the world of of manufacturing and food, you know, if we want to go down that rabbit hole, you know, my passion has been slow food mentality. My passion has been real food. And that's a conversation that has evolved over the past 20, 25 years. But it's something that is still fairly recent in our human history, you know, is that totally. All this kind of industrial revolution where we're just producing shit on a plate. And it's like, okay, how can we strip all that stuff away and make something delicious? And that's been honestly probably our biggest challenge is taking something where you're making small batch in a restaurant and then scaling it to then exactly. where you're meeting the needs of a Publix, right? I mean, it's like, how do you maintain that same integrity? It has been a big learning curve because when you go to a co-packer, which is essentially the person that's going to do all the bottling line, they have a method, right? They're scientists. They're, you know, this is the formulation. This is what I'm going to follow. And that's all you can really prescribe to. So I'm a chef. I don't have a box. Like I want to think outside the box and right. try to, you know, just because this is the way you've always done it doesn't make it the right way. So how we've been able to engage different co-packers, it's a game that we've been trying to play. We've still haven't settled on one yet. So I literally take a bucket and I hand fill everything. So I drive to the farm in North Carolina. I found a farm called Bailey Farms. It's a, you know, seventh generation family farm, I believe they are. And they're doing things the right way, but they've also been able to scale so that their peppers are bought. Limehouse here locally will buy Bailey Farm peppers. Bilo uses them as their primary. So they've been able to scale, but still do things the right way. And that allows us to also scale with them. So amazing. That's our source for peppers.
And that's one thing that I think is so important because for some reason, and maybe just to make it make sense financially, but people want you to just kind of bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like, if you have something so special and delicious like red clay, right. you know, like how many markets does it need to be in? And should it be something that's yeah. but it still makes sense and you can actually make a living at it. You know, that's a delicate line to walk.
I mean, it's all about sustainability, right? I mean, everything, look at everything that's sustainable. Like you have to grow in a manner that still harkens back to the original integrity of what you're trying to achieve.
Yes.
When you, it's a mission statement for a company. So once you kind of dig your heels in and say, this is who we are, all your decisions moving forward need to harken back to that. If not, you lose sight of who you are really quickly. And we're not trying to, you know, just make a buck. We're trying to make something delicious that we believe in that has a bigger impact. Like purpose is everything to me. Like I just don't want to make something to earn a buck. I want to know that what I'm doing has value beyond that. And I think what we do with our relationships certainly accounts for that, how we get involved in the community, sustainable practices. I think it all will start creating a ripple effect down the line.
I totally agree. And I think when you taste the hot sauce, that's why it's so, it is something special. And I think the people who know and love it here and who get excited about giving it to people like I do, and putting it in their stocking and sending it in care packages if they're, you know, friends that have moved to California and things like that. Like, you want it to be something that has a sense of place. And it really does. Yeah. Like, I can taste a complete difference. It's not like it's, you know, in champagne, sometimes they'll blend to like a house standard or it could taste like anything depending on, no matter what the year.
It's just muddled. And yeah, you hit on something pretty cool there, a sense of place. Like that's what red clay is to me. That's where the brand name came from.
Exactly.
Is a sense of place going back to my youth with my grandparents. I mean, I have my granddad tattooed on me. Like I grew up without a dad. He was the kind of the fatherly influence on me. And I had a conversation with someone the other day about, you know, how has all your life experiences, like where do they all draw from? And I just, every time when I'm looking at a problem, I always go to the core. So then like when I'm looking back at my own life, I go back to like, where are the fundamental practices and beliefs that I have, where are they rooted in? And I can draw it to red clay. I can draw it to South Georgia with my granddad. And so that name for the brand kind of came from that. It's a sense of place. And I think that's what provides Southern food. I think that's what separates it from every other area in this country is, you know, there's not like Midwestern food doesn't like really drive home a sense of place, right? It's like steak and potatoes.
Yeah. You can't really picture that.
Yeah,
you know,
Southern
it doesn't conjure
food,
an image.
Yeah. And Southern food 100% does. And it's this like huge eclectic pot of stories. So it's a fascinating thing to be a part of that.
Yeah. And I love how the restaurants here embrace it and how people get excited about it. And the Red Clay Verde.
Yeah.
Also one of my favorite sauces.
Yeah.
And when did you decide to kind of like experiment with other versions of red clay?
Well, we came out with the original and then the Verde was a loose riff on something that I had done at The Ordinary. Mm-hmm. And I just liked those flavor profiles. I would give a shout out to Ari Kolender, who was the sous, and then opened up Leon's. But we kind of developed a dish together at The Ordinary that was had similar flavor profiles, green jalapeno, sliced apples, and fennel for a razor clam dish there. And then I just evolved that to something that was kind of uniquely ours. And just to kind of differentiate, when you go out to the market with just one sauce, then you start looking at how you can be competitive with some of the other folks out there. And actually, when I started working at Leon's, Brooks and Ari put Red Clay on the table right away. No questions asked. They were supporting me. I just left The Ordinary, was a new dad. Life was full of change. And that was kind of a great anchor for us.
Yeah.
And I noticed they had green Tabasco on the table, and I tasted it, and it tasted awful, frankly.
Yeah.
It just didn't taste like anything. I wasn't sure what it was. I couldn't discern anything. And I said, okay, let's make something better than this. And that's what we set out to do. And I believe, without being arrogant, I believe we've done that.
I totally agree, because I feel like when you taste a lot of the green sauces, especially Tabasco, A, it's always the one that's still full on the table,
right,
if you notice, and B,
right,
it's just kind of like a smack of vinegar in the face. Like, there's not really anything going on. I don't know. When I taste the Red Clay Verde, one of my favorites,
I think it's super versatile, too. Like, it's the way that I like to eat, actually. I think the original is, like, you know, always going to have a place in my heart for what it is. But the Verde, like, I love to eat clean and healthy. And I think it allows you to eat clean and healthy, but have, like, this crazy variety to it. It doesn't become boring.
Yeah.
And avocados are fantastic. Like, I'm not trying to, like, jump on the bandwagon too much of avocado toast, but it's there.
It's not going anywhere.
Right.
We might as well
embrace
it.
It's so damn good. Like,
yeah.
People aren't hating on fried chicken. It's been around forever.
Yeah.
So why is avocado toast getting such a bad rap? But yeah, the Verde is just, it's the cilantro brings a lot to it. The spiciness and just these herbaceous and vegetal qualities. I think it's distinct in what it is.
Yeah. And I kind of get, if I'm feeling lazy about a sauce or a dressing, I'll kind of, I lean hard on the Red Clay Verde, you know, for like a piece of fish or something like that. It really is one of my favorite things, to reach for. But yeah, I'm such a fan, and I was so excited to get to talk to you about it, because, you know, I'm always amazed when people take something that's so important to them, and it actually goes somewhere. Cause I've seen it. Yeah. I mean, I see people, like friends that I know, that'll be talking about it in California, probably because Ari's there. And how many markets is it in? Like,
I mean, we're all over the country right now, and our website sales are crazy. We shipped to Alaska last week. I mean, I get these little emails coming through. And again, we were talking earlier, like, I'm just a dude. Like, I don't think of myself in these kind of like grand circles, but just to think about where it's going and the people that are having it, like Stephen Colbert is using it on a show and giving it to these celebrity contacts, you know, Sean Brock, you know, he gave it out as a gifting for Christmas. It's like, that dude's like revered all over the world for his talent. Brooks, just being like having him put it on the table. I'm like forever grateful, right? Because that helped establish us. And without those anchors, without people supporting it, you know, it doesn't do anything. And it's grown so organically because of that support. And I don't know necessarily where I can pinpoint that support being generated from, but I do know that it's like super humbling. And I'm like extremely grateful for it, because it's allowed me to create a different life for myself that is like what I feel true purpose, which is my family. Like, I want to just be the most kick-ass dad in the world. And so that's allowed me to create new opportunities where I can focus on Red Clay and my family. So
it's an amazing story. And I completely agree, especially for people who work in the industry. Like, eventually they want to get to a place where they can have more of a life work balance, or have something to be like, okay, this is what I've fostered and I've learned in this amazing industry.
Right.
But you can't, you know, you can't cook when you're 70. You can't wait table. I mean, you can, and if you are, you're a badass.
Yeah, you're a hero.
I love you. My knees won't last that long.
Right.
I'm quite sure of it. But yeah, it's like, how, you know, I think your stories like yours are such an inspiration to people who are like, you learned those discerning abilities by being a chef, and how you saw that niche. And I think it's inspirational to people out there who are kind of working, being like, where's the next step for me?
We all love the industry. You know, and I think that's a hot topic, and it has been over the past few years. It's, we love the industry, but there's parts of the industry we don't love.
Yeah,
and
it's hard.
I feel like
the
conversation is somewhat stagnant, and I don't see it progressing a lot. You know, we talk about, yes, it is a problem,
but we never say how to fix it.
Right. So there's never a solution. And I've always heard that, you know, calling a complaint or complaining about something without a solution is just a bitch or it's just a whine.
Yeah.
Right. So let's stop whining about it and right. create your own path. Like red clay was a blessing. Like, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And then I was resourceful. Like being a chef is all about being resourceful. You have to 86 something. What are you going to do in its place?
Right.
You got to be able to think on your feet. Apply that to life. Like, okay, this is where I want to be. You got to have that talk with yourself at some point. Like, do I want to be the 60-year-old dude flipping pans on a line? Probably not.
Probably not.
But how many people are Brooks? How many people are getting five restaurants or whatever he's got now and super successful? And he's grinding away. He's not like sitting back on his
hunches. No, it doesn't just come to him.
Right. Yeah. So, but he's the one percenter. So what are we doing about all the other folks? And what how can we help teach them to create something better for themselves so that they can make food and beverage what they want it to be? Because everybody puts a lot into it. So that return has to be equal, if not more, right?
Yeah.
So,
and everybody's strengths are so different. You know, it's, if you're a host, it's like there could be a future for you in something else someday. You know, I don't ever like to talk about it in a way that's like, oh, when I get out of here, because I found myself doing that. You know, I'm like a lifetime career restaurant person and I have been, and I love it. But I, as the older I get, and I have three kids now and it's like, I find myself being like, ugh, I got to get out of the restaurant. And then I went to an event that we had here in Charleston and it was for a charity and it was just a bunch of my friends and people that work in the industry. And I was like, I have to stop talking about it like that because these are the people that I love. And what would I be doing? I'd just be one of the guests. I'd just be a regular person, you know?
Right.
And that's cool too, but it's like, don't hate it while you're in it, but look for the way out and what the next step is for you. And so when I see people like you that have done that, it's really, it's inspirational.
I think you just have to have the perspective. Like you got to put your head down and grind. Like
that's
you have to. But while doing so, you need to be thinking bigger picture too. Like you can have a micro and macro thought process. And I think sometimes folks just get so embedded in the micro that they're not having that larger perspective. And sometimes it just takes someone else having that conversation with you. That conversation had to happen to me. I'm not smart enough to think on my own like that. Right. But I'm smart enough to know that I don't have the answers. So I listen a lot to other people.
Yes.
And that's where I think my biggest strength is. I was never the most talented chef. I like to find the product. I like to butcher. But you know, I'm not a Jason Stanhope. Like that dude's like off the charts talent,
that guy's
right?
Insane.
So I had to start thinking creatively. Like, okay, I'm going to have to zig when these guys are zagging and just you carve out your own path. And everybody's got to walk their own journey and it's fun figuring that out. I would love to find a way to support those people on their journey.
Yeah. You know, that's something I'm always thinking about as well, because even the podcast, that's been something for me where we have conversations with people and I always feel like we're getting kind of one step closer, but I think it would be amazing to sort of find these niches and things that people are good at and within the community and see how they could kind of further
evolve.
Yeah. Jeff, it's been really wonderful talking with you.
Yeah, thank you.
I will be continually buying your stuff and giving it out and looking like a hero. And if they want to buy red clay and they don't live in Charleston, they can go online.
Certainly. Go online. We actually showcase everybody that carries us online. And so you could either look up the different stores and you could also just go buy it online. But we're growing. We're having a lot of fun.
So it's probably
got some pretty
in your
big goals.
Grocery store, wherever you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Lowe's Foods is a big supporter. We got some other exciting things online that we're not quite ready to announce, but hopefully going to be taking the world over.
Well, I can't wait to watch. It's always in my fridge for sure. Get some red clay. Do it. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Isn't he the best? Oh my God. Everything about that guy, inspirational. He gives me hope. He gives me hope that for everybody that's as dynamic and versatile and talented and smart, quick on their feet, the people that work in food and beverage, you don't know where it's going to take you. You never do. I'm honored every single week that people even press play on this. And if you do, thank you. And you can support the show, which is free to you. Have I mentioned that the show is free to you? It is. It's free. By leaving us a comment on iTunes. You can rate and review the show. You can do it. You can tell me that I'm jackass for hating on them for canceling the party. You can say whatever you want. I love your feedback. I love you guys. I want to hear from you always. I'm not exaggerating about the red clay fancy basket. I'll send you a care package if you've never tried it before, but don't fucking lie to me. If you have tried it before and you're just trying to get free red clay, I'll know. And I'll hunt you down. Whoa. Okay. No, well, that's all. That's all. Tune in next week. It's going to be pretty awesome. Natalie Freon is going to be here from Basic Kitchen. She is an amazing woman. And it's going to be a great show. Guys, every single week, it's just me and you taking on the world. Oh, if you haven't listened to our baby sister podcast, it's called Serial. It debuted on International Serial Day. It's chronicled phone conversations with me and Philip Michael Cohen. You know him. You love him. You can find it. It's at the Serial Podcast on Instagram. You can also look it up on iTunes, and it's just Serial, C-E-R-E-A-L. They're silly, delicious 20-minute episodes of me and Philip eating cereal. Go there and listen to this week's episode. If you haven't listened to it already, download it. Tell me what you think of it. I have a lot of fun doing it. There's only 10 episodes and we're already two in, so you don't want to miss a minute. They're going to go by quick. But yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye. Bye-bye. Sorry if I hurt your feelings because you were one of the older white people that went to the festival. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it to come off like that, you know? I didn't mean it. But it really was just older white people. That's all. That was just a fact. It wasn't even my opinion. It was just facts. All right, bye.